Who were you before you lost your wild self?
That's what we're helping you explore on the Tend Her Wild podcast.
Through questions and tools around how best to listen to your inner voice,
rewild ourselves, and live the most authentic life where we thrive instead of survive.
I'm Betsy.
And I'm Kate.
And we're so glad you've joined us for this episode.
Hello, Tend Her Wild listeners. For season two, we want to hear from you. We want to ask that you email us or call us and leave us a voice message sharing your story, your questions, the topics you want to hear more about, or your thoughts on rewilding and living your authentic life. To reach us, you can email us at tendherwild@gmail.com or call us at 319-354-354. 4062 and leave us a message. We'll even play your question live on our show. Hello, Tend Her Wild podcast listeners. In today's episode, we're going to talk about the concept of the upper limit, this glass ceiling that we're often operating under to hold us in place, and the barriers that we have that we don't even realize to our own potential. So Betsy, you and I have both had this conversation in the last few weeks, and you taught on it a while back.
Yep.
And then I had some videos show up about it. So we felt like the universe is really telling us to look at this concept. And so let's define it for people. It's based on a book.
Yeah. The book is called The Big Leap by Kay Hendricks. But it's this idea that we actually all have so much more potential in us than we ever really imagined. And we have such a deep capacity to feel good and to experience creativity and connection and abundance. And yet, because we have a limited tolerance for feeling good, we subconsciously sabotage when we're feeling good. So we have an amazing day. We walk in the door, things are great. And at a deep level, we somehow don't believe we're worthy of feeling that good. And so we pick a fight with our spouse or our kid, and suddenly it all unravels and we're back at sort of a lower baseline than we could be. And so, yeah, we just want to pick this apart today because I feel like it's something that we all run into. And so much of what I think helps us through these tough things is to talk about it, to get consciousness around it, to see it in our own life. That's where I think the seeds of change start to happen.
Yeah. One of my favorite phrases in the book is that we each have an inner thermostat that determines how much love, success, and creativity we actually allow.
Yeah.
So thinking about, you know, my own thermostat and where is it set and when was it set?
I think yes.
is really where you start.
Yeah, I think that's where we can start. Yeah, I mean, I think the core question that we want all of the listeners and you and I are sitting in this today is really the deep question of how much goodness am I willing to allow in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And then what's getting in the way of me actually being in what I really feel and envision as a completely endless flow of abundance. Like it surrounds us. There's goodness, there's light around us, there's miracle around us, there's magic around us.
Joy.
There's joy around us. And yet we're going to talk about, well, why don't I feel worthy of that? Or why can't I allow that in? Or why do I sabotage that when it does show up? Because again, we're all in this human predicament together. Yeah. And this is real. We do this to ourselves.
Yeah. And I'm guessing it's very deep in us because we do have this, you know, we talk about kind of this negative space that we often come from, like fear, right? And so the human experience has been, we need to fear for our lives. And
yeah,
so it's so deeply embedded in our brains and how our brains operate that it requires us to unlearn or transform out of that space to be able to really grasp this concept, which, you know, it's I want to say I left the book feeling like this is simple and complex all at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that, but that's how I felt. I'm like,
Yeah.
This really isn't that hard, and yet it's very
And
complex.
actually, I love that you said that because I feel like that's at the heart of all of the deepest spiritual work and growth is that it's so simple, right? Like mindfulness, be in the present moment. It's so simple and it's so hard to keep at it. It's a practice. And I think what we're talking about today is also a practice. And we're going to talk here in a moment that we really feel this is also the rewilding process as well. So we're all in practice. We're all in process. We never are going to finish it. It's just kind of an ongoing thing. But I do think for us to flesh this idea out that we create upper limits for ourselves. Like there's so much more abundance. We have so much of a deeper capacity to tap into our potential. And then we unconsciously sabotage it. So let's talk about in this book, The Big Leap, they talk about sort of four reasons as to why we sabotage ourselves or that we don't feel worthy of the full potential and the full experience of life that's there for us. And as we this morning went through these four things together, we were both like, oh, that's me. And then the next one, you're like, oh, that's me. And so it worked out perfect. There's four sort of potential reasons that we get stuck in this upper limit problem. And Kate has two of them and I have two of them. Actually, I feel like I have all four of them, but two of them are very strong in
me. It's what jumped out at both of us for sure for ourselves. Yes. And this is that thermostat, how it gets set.
Yes. Right? So it taps into the question we ask all of our guests, which is, tell us about the first 10 years. Again, we've come back around to this idea, but I think it's so at the heart is that we learn for better or worse, our pathways, our patterns, the unconscious tapes that play in the background of our life. This all gets set up early on in our upbringing. And so that's why it is essential for us to acknowledge, understand, heal, come to terms with what we came out of in those first early years.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about these four things that maybe are at the source of why we create these limits for ourselves internally and why we have a hard time really tapping into our potential. And the first one is that we feel fundamentally flawed. So we feel like there's something deeply wrong with us. So then it goes, well, why would I ever be abundant, successful, joyful, connected, creative? And so we play it safe. We play it small. We hold ourselves back. And
this was you, right?
This
you
was immediately me. I was said, telling you, like I carry sort of this deep sense that there's something wrong with me. And I'm sure there are many potential sources for it, but I did, experience a deep trauma about the age I was five. And when the brain is five, anything bad that happens to you, it's the little brain goes, well, I'm bad because something bad happened to me. I am bad. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an opportunity to have anyone correct that story or that belief that sort of started for me. And so I think at a very deep subconscious level, I was constantly carrying, I must be bad. I must be bad. I must be bad. So I need to work extra hard to prove that I'm good and that I'm worthy. And that, I think it's been a part of my drive and my perfectionism is if I can just prove that I'm good, then that'll override this deep feeling that I'm somehow fundamentally flawed. So I can see this playing out in my own life, the ways that I've held back, the ways that I've, played small or avoided really courageously stepping into something, because underneath it was this deep belief that there's something wrong with me. Yeah.
And now that you, even just in your work in the last many years that you've shared with people, do you feel like now you recognize that? And so it makes it easier to catch those moments.
Absolutely.
The awareness is there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think it wasn't until just the last year or two that I put that puzzle piece into place of like, oh, because something bad happened to me when I was five, I believed I was bad, which is why I went to such extremes to prove that I was good. Mm-hmm. Where actually the belief system I function from now as an older adult is we're all inherently good. Everyone born on this planet is inherently good. We all have, you know, it's just our birthright. It's who we are. We're not, you know, this kind of idea of original sin. I don't really attune with anymore because I actually don't think that we come into this lifetime bad. I think we come in beautiful and pure and good, and bad things happen, but that doesn't mean we're bad. And so, yeah, I think I really have started to break out of this belief of being fundamentally flawed. But I will say I still have to catch myself. And I think I shared with you earlier today, Kate, that I had an argument with my partner in the last week or so, and I watched that my first instinct always is I'm bad. I've done something wrong. Mm. I've done something wrong. It really had nothing to do with me, you know? But my first instinct is, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, it's me. It's me. I've done something wrong. I'm a bad person. Right. But I did see it. I did catch it. So you're right. Like and I think this is the way with all of our patterning, it doesn't go away, right? Like it's wired in. So, but it doesn't mean that it has to be at, you know, high volume. We can learn to turn the volume down on this patterning and then create new patterning on top of it, which is more functional and more healthy.
Right. And that's how we change the thermostat.
Exactly. Right? Exactly.
We have that power.
Yeah. All right. So the next upper limit is the one that you related to.
This jumped right out at me. So this one is disloyalty and abandonment. So I cannot expand to my full potential because it would cause me to end up alone, be disloyal to my roots, and leave people behind. So we feel like we're breaking some sort of unspoken family rules to get where we are. And whenever I told you, whenever I take these strengths finders or assessments, loyalty for me is a very high value. It shows up everywhere when I take those things. So I know loyalty is something that is strong in me. And when I think about my own leaving different positions or changing my career, I struggle every time with leaving people behind. Even though I know inherently it's the right thing for me, I feel the guilt and the shame of leaving others behind. You know, for when I left law, I felt so much guilt to my father. I felt like I was being disloyal to my father, who I adore and admire. He's a lawyer. And so I had all this guilt and of feeling like I was abandoning him. He'd supported my legal education. I had followed in his footsteps. So that loyalty was really, you know, popped up for me. And I spent about a year trying to work through that. And when I finally had the difficult conversation with him to share with him what I wanted to do, I remember so clearly how he said, "I just want you to be happy. Mm. I don't care if you're selling shoes." That's what he told me. And I'll never forget that, because in my mind, I had set this, you know, the story I was telling myself is I'm going to hurt him. And so I think we often hold ourselves back because of this and feeling like we can't leave people behind. And then in other jobs, it's the people that I'm working with or the people that I'm leading or the, you know, my team members. And so for me, I have moved past that in my decisions, but it definitely takes me longer. It holds me back. And, you know, to the point where I feel like I finally make a big decision I've intended to make for years at 51, right? It took that long for me to actually step into what I believed I wanted to do.
And where do you think, because again, the concept is all of these things get planted early on in our life, mm-hmm. right? So we can, and it's interesting because I hear a lot of people say, well, I don't remember things in my early life, which is often true. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes it's a mark of trauma. Like we can't remember everything that happened. But do you see the seed of disloyalty and fearing, like if I'm not loyal, I'm abandoning my family or my sisters? Do you see that way back early in your life? Like, do you see where that seed got planted? I mean, do you understand why loyalty has been such a sort of value of yours?
Yeah. So I'm still trying to uncover some of those reasons, but I think growing up in a very Catholic family where we had each other's backs and we were very close, but we also private. I think probably that loyalty, right? This like be loyal to one another, not even just my immediate family, but more like beyond that extended family. That's kind of, you know, what you're taught. And
the privacy is a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
Right. It's like a stoic privacy. Like we don't let anyone else know what we're struggling with, right? That's just, that stays in the circle, which there's something beautiful about that. And there's something, you know, it induces shame with it. It's like, oh, I should be ashamed of this. So we don't tell anyone about this family secret.
Right. Yeah. And then I think part of my own, especially with my career, was the tracks were laid very young for me about being a lawyer. So that became what I was, you know, I thought the expectation was there because I heard that message loud and clear when I was young.
Yeah.
And I think many, you know, young women in our age group heard you be a lawyer, you be a doctor, you know, those are the pinnacle of success. And so that was buried very deep and early.
Yeah.
And so those things combined, because that got wrapped up in my relationship with my father, I see that now as really, you know, kind of held me back from probably where my, we'll get to this, but where my genius was maybe not, that's not where it was.
Right.
And I intuitively knew it, but the thermostat was set and that was where I was going.
Yeah.
So.
Today's episode is supported by Dr. Yoga Mama. This is Dr. Betsy, and if you are interested in working with me in a deeper way, you can check out all the different offerings I have going on. Online courses, retreats around the world, weekly yoga classes, and my monthly Wisdom Wednesday, which is the first Wednesday of each month where I talk about the intersection of yoga, psychology, mindfulness, and spirituality. You can find it all the information at www.dryogamama.com.
This episode is also being sponsored by Kate Moreland Coaching. If you have an interest in transformational coaching, either in an individual or group setting, please reach out to katemorelandcoaching.com.
So the third reason that we might have a thermostat that gets set early in our childhood that prevents us from really moving into our fullest potential is we believe that more success will bring a bigger burden to those around us.
Mm-hmm. This was me too, right?
Yeah.
So for this one, I told you, I feel like I really tried to navigate my, this again is kind of my career, but my life so that I was balancing working and I would go part-time. And I remember thinking, I just turn it to 60%. Then I won't be, this won't be much of a burden to my family. I can still show up as a mom solid 40% of the time, and that will be great. And then I backed it to 50%, right? Because I didn't want to overburden. I didn't ask for help. I remember my mom saying, why don't you get a cleaning lady? Right. And that felt like, oh, I should be able to do all of this because I'm only working 60% of the time. So I held my own success back because I was trying to make the right formula for everyone around me and not overburden people. Take on, you know, the responsibilities I felt like were mine. I look back and it held back my success, even in the career I was in at the time, because I was trying to make it okay for everybody else. Yeah.
And I do think women, you know, one of the marks of our nervous system is the connectivity with everyone else around us. So I think we do carry an extra sensitivity to tuning into the needs of others. And we do take that into mind when we're thinking about our experience. You and I, why we loved this book, and there was so much in it that we felt is really relevant. We also took into consideration that this book and this sort of theory concept was created by a white man. And so, and brilliant, right? Brilliant ideas, brilliant thinker. And you and I were talking about like, well, how do these ideas relate to all humans? But then how is the experience of a woman different? And then how is the experience of a brown woman and a black woman and a trans woman? And like, how is that even different from this idea of like, okay, you're holding yourself back and it comes from the seeds of your childhood. And how do you break through it? Well, there's truth in this. And we also live in a system.
Additional barriers.
That creates barriers that we might not be able to just upper limit our way through, right? You know?
Right.
So it's this conversation is not, you know, like any deep conversation is not clean, easy, and clear.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
So the fourth one was one that
I related to.
Yes.
This is called the crime of outshining. So for me to expand in my full success, I would then outshine someone, fill in the blank, my sister, my dad, my mom, my cousin, you know, my sibling, whatever. And you don't want to make that person feel or look bad. So you turn down the volume on your own potential, your own genius, so others don't feel threatened. Mm-hmm. Or if you choose to keep shining, then you express to everyone that you don't enjoy it.
Oh, that's interesting. Say more about that.
Yeah. So maybe someone is really stepping into their full genius, their full capacities, but to make it more palatable to people around them, they make it very clear that it's really hard and that I don't fully enjoy it and it's a big burden. So it's like you are in your potential, but you're not having any fun with it. You're not really enjoying it.
Yeah, you deflate your own.
You deflate it. Yeah. And I've told this story several times before, and we laugh about it in my family as well. But my sister was 5 when I was born, and the joke is she hated me till I was about 21. Simply because she had been the only child and a new child comes in and takes attention and time. And so I sensed that, I felt that I don't have any hard feelings towards her, but I see and can remember moments as a child that I felt embarrassed about a success or felt like I didn't want anyone to know. It's interesting. This is just coming to me now. I wrote a book 8 or 10 years ago I had a co-author. I didn't tell anyone that this book was coming out.
You didn't tell me.
I didn't tell anyone. And I look back now and feel like this is a good example of this fear of outshining, the crime of outshining, that I don't want to make anyone feel bad, or I don't want to, you know, I don't want to toot my own horn, or I don't want to really step into this. There's some kind of shame with it. And so I'm just going to like do my work, but under the radar so that it somehow won't make anyone feel bad. And it takes me back to that Marianne quote that you and I have talked about on this podcast so many times, where it's like, yeah, we're more scared of our light than our dark. Who am I to say, who am I to be, in her words, beautiful, fabulous. So we hold ourselves back, but in that teaching, you know, we're not really helping anyone.
Right. Right.
But this is of all four that we've talked about, I still think this is, I'm conscious of it now, but this is still one that will slip in for mm-hmm. me, right? Will definitely slip in.
I think this harkens back to elementary, middle school. This is the competitive nature that often women have too, of also not wanting to be too big, because you talked about this, women seek connection.
It's very, we want to be
feminine.
Connected.
And so there's a fear of losing that if you do step into your genius, that it's an either or.
And in some ways that fear, at least for me and much of my life, has been much bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The fear of losing connection is much bigger than the fear of, maybe I'm not in my full potential.
Isn't that the mm-hmm. truth? And that's not true for men. I was saying, a man says, and I watched this for years in my previous role, a man says, I'm going to start a business. The man next to him says, that's amazing. How can I invest? A woman says, I have an idea for something. And she starts working on it. And then she looks around and says, where is everybody? Mm. You know, and I think that's true of too, climbing the ladder as a woman. You get to a CEO role or a bigger role, and then you look around and there's fewer women beside you. Yeah. So that's where that upper limit for women, it is different. And it doesn't feel good, because when we're in our feminine, there is a connection and there is a, you know, the sisterhood. And so it feels like you're abandoning that notion of sisterhood.
Yeah.
Somehow.
And yet I also wonder, you know, that we all come in with this seed of potential. We all come in my belief, to make an impact, right? To be of service on some level, in some way, in this lifetime and in this, and to learn our lessons, right? And so, you know, yeah, how, when we hold back from our potential, are we missing the opportunity to, you know, because, okay, so we should probably define, like, if you can, so we sabotage ourselves. We sabotage ourselves with negative thoughts, worry, criticism, blame, deflection, getting sick or hurt, hiding our feelings, avoiding speaking the truth. These are all the ways we sort of sabotage ourselves from being able to really step into our zone of genius.
Right.
So let's define, like, this zone of genius is when we are really in our full potential. We're in the flow. We're really deeply tapped into our intuitive nature, and we're allowing ourselves to be in this potential. And you and I already talked about, we sort of see this. This is the wild woman. This is like, I'm in alignment with my instinct.
Right.
I'm tapped in and I'm living from this zone of genius.
Yeah. And the zones, the zone of excellence is kind of right below zone of genius. And zone of excellence is where I lived most of my, and I'm probably still there in some ways for sure, but I see now the difference. And the zone of excellence is really where the security is. It's the comfort zone. It's, you want to stay there because there is a sense of security, and that's reaching where the rest, the external world told you you should want to be.
Yeah. And you're doing a good job.
Yes.
You're doing good job. You're doing good at your work. You're doing good in your life. You have a gnawing sense, like, there's more, there's something more, right. There's something more, but yeah, you're in a zone of excellence. You're just doing fine.
Yeah. So moving into that zone of genius is really where you fully use your gifts. So in the zone of excellence, you may be using some of them, but you're not in your full potential. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have that sense of when we're in roles where it's not a perfect match. I actually saw a quote this week, which is why when we talked about doing this, I was like, wow. And it said, the universe will never give you peace in something you were never meant to settle in.
Mm.
So I think the zone of excellence, there's a lack of peace. Mm. And you can't quite put your finger on it, maybe, but you know something's kind of off, or that you're not, and it really comes down to just the feeling, like you're not feeling it in a full way. And if the journey to the zone of genius is finding where you feel the goodness, you feel the light, you feel complete, and like you're giving back all that you're here to give back.
Yeah. But I think we also have to speak to the reality about lifting up into your zone of genius is going to stir up a lot of fear. It's not an easy, it's not necessarily an easy step, because once you have this commitment to, I want to inhabit more of my fullest potential, the ego, and what is the ego? The ego thrives on fear, worry, but the ego also really appreciates comfort zones. Like, the ego doesn't like us to change. It doesn't like us to make big shifts in our life. It doesn't necessarily like us to step up and out. So the ego will create all kinds of excuses as to why you can't do this, why you're too much, you're going to abandon your family, you know, you're going to be a big burden to people because of your success.
Right.
You're not
you
really
are?
Worthy of success anyway. Like, the ego is going to make all these things come very alive. And so you have to, like, step through that fear, be with that fear, know that it's going to show up.
And I think it's akin to when you are connecting with the wild woman archetype. So when you have moments where you feel like you are embracing that wild woman archetype, right? You are also, that's to me, it's very much like your zone of genius. It's tapping into your intuition, knowing your gifts, feeling very connected to your inner self. Mm-hmm. And there's fear in that too.
Yeah.
And great power in that. And so
yeah.
I have felt at times where I'm there and then I pull back. So
totally.
It's very much, I feel those things are very symbiotic. Like it's.
Yeah. Well, I know Clarissa Pickola Estes and Women Who Run With the Wolves talks about the wild woman is sometimes called the woman who lives at the edge of the world. And I appreciate this. It's like, you're always tracking the edges of the forest, the edges, you know, and so that inherently means you're not in your comfort zone. And we all love a good comfort zone.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and I actually think it's okay. There's going to be various times in our life where staying in the comfort zone is actually useful and important.
Right.
But it's not a forever place to land, or stuff does get stagnant. And I think that, you know, as I think about a lot of the people I see in my practice, they're coming in with a stagnancy. There's a stuckness, right? Like a, you know, like it's either stuckness, it's often stuckness in the body, because I do such deep mind body work with people, but there's a stuckness, like there's a pain, there's a disease, there's a diagnosis, there's symptoms, right? Like there's something stuck. There isn't a flow happening.
Right.
And trying to identify like what's keeping me stuck. And so often it's a comfort zone. And there's so much fear of expanding to the edges of the world, right?
Right.
In a symbolic way.
And so, yeah, this book really, you know, walks you through this awareness of what your own upper limits are. And it's, like we said, it's deep and simple all at the same time, and yet requires kind of the resetting of your thermostat.
Yeah.
Which I love that analogy, because we are in control of it. I mean, that's what I walked away. We really are in control of our thermostat.
Yeah.
And life's going to happen.
Yeah.
We also talked about that, right? It's not like you get to the zone of genius and then
everything is
bad will ever
lovely
happen.
Lovely. And yeah.
You will still experience pain. And
absolutely.
You know, we're not running from that. We're not moving to a place where, you know, it's idyllic and there's no pain, but you're being in your full potential.
Yeah.
I have to believe also allows you to navigate pain and strife, maybe in an authentic way, and in a, maybe a way that where you tapped into your strengths to get through those times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think being in more of your zone of genius and your full potential, you actually have more access to your true nature. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we're in a comfort zone, there is like some numbness in a comfort zone, right? It's like, as if you right. were to really feel everything, you'd be like, oh, this comfort zone is kind of nice, but I'm like, I feel something's missing, or I feel a little depressed, or I feel, you know?
Yes.
And so, yeah, we're forced to, when we're in our zone of genius and we're in a full potential, really, like we're so much more plugged into more of us. Like we've reclaimed more of us.
Right.
We're firing on more engines in some ways.
Yeah.
So again, it doesn't mean bad things won't happen or challenges won't come, but we have more of our own juju to work with, more of our own battery power to work with. Yeah. Yeah. I want to end with, there was a beautiful affirmation that Gay Hendricks, the author of this book, Dr. Hendricks, has written. And, you know, affirmations, I think that they're not the be all end all, right? Like, I don't think just reciting affirmations to yourself is going to change your life. But they hold sort of a power or vibration that they actually help us remember. We won't remember indefinitely. We'll get out of it, you know, but there's some, you know,
there's a manifesting power.
Yes. There's some good shift that can happen with it. And this affirmation is, I expand in abundance, success, and love every day. as I inspire those around me to do the same. So I expand in abundance, success, and love every day as I inspire those around me to do.
And I think that's a beautiful way to end.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I actually thanks Kate for inspiring me as you continue to expand in your own abundance, success, and love. And I think that that's what we give each other, is that when you see other people, and that's that Marianne Williamson quote, when you do it, you give other people permission to do that. And just imagine if all of us were
in our zone,
in our zone of genius, being more, living more from our fullest potential.
Well, right back at you.
All right.
Thanks.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for joining us today. If you like this podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review. Come back and rewild with us again next week.